Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 538. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
And he's back.
I'm back.
Hi, baby.
How are you?
I'm so good, and I'm so excited.
You're so tan.
I am kind of tan. I was noticing that today.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm more tan.
You're more tan.
But you're tan.
But I don't know what that is. Like, I've been walking a lot, and I put some sunscreen on, but...
Not bad. I mean, it looks good. It looks healthy and colorful.
I think that's good, right? I put the sunscreen on my chest and I put the sunscreen on my face, but...
I think it just was warm today. It was sunny and beautiful.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I just got back from San Diego, and today people keep asking, oh, what's it like to be back in Chicago after being in gorgeous San Diego? I'm like, well, Chicago's having San Diego weather right now.
It's just gorgeous. Yeah, it's been really,
the difference
really
is that
nice.
It's like this in San Diego
all the
every
time.
Day.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was in San Diego, it was boiling, but it's nice that...
Oh my goodness, it was perfect.
The weather was great for you. I'm excited. The next show that you're going to be on with us next week is going to be your San Diego show. I love that you take us to places and give us the queertastic review of
great.
How
it's
it was.
It's a great queer town.
And we can talk about not only the scene, but also why you were there and your show and all that. But I have been kind of dying to talk to you about some hot topics, so I'm hoping we can have a dishy show. Today.
Dish it up.
Well, first of all, you know, this is perhaps a little old news, but it's new news, at least for you and I. You know, we like to watch these award shows together.
Obsessively.
And really what would have been the best podcast ever was if we had had a podcast to release the day after the VMAs, but I almost can't stand it. So we're kind of going to just do a little shortened Cliff Notes version of it, but...
Okay, well, what did you think? Tell me, because we haven't even talked about it.
Okay, so I kind of thought it was like hot mess, talented 20 minutes.
Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then...
I am so rubbed off on you.
You have.
That was so Jewish.
One of my friends said, you are so Jewish.
That was so...
Why are you so Jewish?
That was so Jewish. I wish people could have seen. I mean, everything Amy just did, her whole shape turned into five-ish Finkel.
One of my friends said to me the other day, she goes, where is all this Yiddish? When did you become so Jewish? And I was like, I don't know.
You know, it was really funny. Yeah,
I was saying something about Schwitzing, and they were like, Schwitzing? What the hell is Schwitzing?
And you didn't say it right.
Yeah, I was, then okay, 20 minutes of like kind of great, and then the end had something that really made me happy and I thought was fun. And then, you know, in the middle of it, kind of history in the making. So that's what I will say about
right.
it.
Let's talk
about the hot mess for. Do you want to give me your flavor?
My impressions were like, because I sort of watched it out of order.
Yep.
Because I watched a lot of it clips because I had a show during it.
Okay, so Lady Gaga opened the show.
Lady Gaga opened. I thought she was weirdly subdued.
Yes.
In performance wise.
But maybe her hip, though. You know, Liza had that.
I know. Liza and Shirley MacLaine and Cheetah Rivera.
Yeah, all the great ones. Lady Gaga. Yeah, yep. Lady Gaga's just entered that pantheon.
Right, exactly.
Of a new hip or whatever.
She doing Fosse dancing?
I don't know.
I thought she was great. I thought one of the things I found odd.
Yes.
Was.
Yes.
That everybody was all about Miley and what a bad influence and all this sort of stuff, and yet Lady Gaga sat there in a bra and thong. So the entire show.
Yes, but she looked like the Venus de Milo.
I knew she was still barely wearing clothes.
She didn't look like, you know, whatever Miley Cyrus looked like. Like some sort of Japonais.
Except Miley was actually wearing more clothes than Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
The difference was... okay, this is my thing.
Lady Gaga wasn't doing anything sexual.
Exactly, except she was sitting there in barely anything. Which I think is great. I have no issues with either of their outfits, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I don't either.
My issue with Miley is a couple of
You have an things. Issue with Miley?
I do.
Okay.
I think she's... I actually like Miley, and I get... this is just my take.
I like rough Miley.
I get very annoyed at people, and mostly people of my generation, who are like, oh, One Direction, oh, NSYNC. I mean, that's years ago. But, I mean, like, the boy bands or whatever the pop thing is, a Bieber or Gaga or whatever the pop thing is at the moment... Particularly like a Cyrus, Miley Cyrus, or a Taylor Swift, or a Bieber. It's like, do we forget that when we were kids, it was David Cassidy and Bobby Goldsboro? I mean, they weren't sexually explicit.
Sean Cassidy.
But we
Olivia Newton-John.
Every group, every age group has their innocuous,
Donny
forgettable
Osmond.
Pop stars that we
well,
loved.
Olivia's not an innocuous,
exactly.
forgettable.
But you know what I'm saying? Like,
Leif Garrett.
That we loved so much, and we, as kids, that we every generation has them. So, A, I want my generation to stop fucking freaking out about it.
Yeah, because sometimes they grow into like Janet Jackson.
Sometimes they grow into Janet Jackson or Olivia Newton-John or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever they do, you know?
Yeah. There's always going to be bubblegum pop.
Yeah,
there's always going to be a teen, tween, little, you know, it's how
exactly.
we fall in love with music. It's important,
that's
rite of passage.
That's my point. There's always...
And then when that person wants to change,
right.
which is what Miley's done, shaved hair, she's gone like the pink Rihanna, and she's like,
right.
okay, those are kind of who I want to be.
Right.
That, you
well,
know...
I have a different take on it.
Okay.
I have a different take on that. But like, exactly, like, at the same time that the Beatles were hitting huge, Sugar Sugar Honey Honey was the number one song in America.
Yeah.
So you see what I'm saying? There's always great art and there's always pop trash that's delightful. I like Miley's Summer Jam. For me, it's...
Yep. Live, she did not sing well.
No. But I like the song on the radio. It's as much a Summer Jam for me as Get Lucky or Blurred Lines.
Yeah.
So here's a couple of things.
Yes.
First of all, with the Miley thing.
Yes.
And this was a discussion. We all talked about it backstage at the show, right?
Yeah.
A bunch of really... I was working with some very smart people, so there was lots of discussions about it.
I'm not smart, so I don't want to.
But you know what I mean?
You.
No, I mean like
I'm teasing
like people
you. Go,
with like
go, go.
Opinions on
yes.
pop. You know what we're doing is a show that reflects pop culture.
Sure.
So talking
you're
about
with improvisers and
right.
comedians, so they're having
current.
To stay current. Yeah.
So my thing, and several other people in the cast,
uh-huh.
is that it's so it seems so calculated.
Uh huh.
It seems like
we have
they,
huge
they,
teddy
they,
bears on stage.
We've said. Somebody said to her, okay, Miley, now's the time that you have to have your freak out Amanda Bynes, Britney Spears shave your head time where you're like, where everybody's a little bit worried about Miley, is she losing it? It seems so corporately calculated. And then they threw her out there. And so my second fold issue with her is that she's not that talented. I like her. I think she actually can sing when I've heard her sing live before, singing country music or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I thought she, I have heard her sing.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, not great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's never going to be Stevie Nicks or a
no.
rock and roll goddess, but fine. It's more that it seems so calculated, and they're like, now's your time to be like wacky and overtly sexual so that everybody's worried about you and so that you'll get all this attention. And guess what, kids? It worked.
Yeah.
Right?
See, I don't perceive her as Britney Spears, or I see her trying to change her hand. She is trying to shed... I mean, physically,
I think
she's
her people,
shorn her hair.
I think her
shed
people,
Hannah Montana.
I think her people are telling her to shed Hannah Montana in the same way that...
And maybe
for
they
about
are.
2 months, Zac Efron walked around dropping condoms and being naked on balconies Somebody's telling them to do this. Mm-hmm. I think that's very corporate. And I'm also fine with that because that's the way the world works. Yeah. My thing is they then thrust her out onto that stage with seemingly very little rehearsal and very little art. Now, when Madonna changes her image and does something super over the top, like kissing Britney or rolling around the floor at the first VMAs, whatever, there's some, you know, regardless of what we think of Madonna, you know, not the greatest singer in the world, but there's some art involved in it.
People would not have said it was art, though, even back then.
I disagree
when
about
she
Madonna,
rolled on
I disagree.
The stage.
I think
like
people
a
did talk about it that way. I think people did talk about it as performance art. Back in the day, it was shocking, but the fact that she was in a wedding dress, the fact that she took the song, which was a pop hit, and then made it something sort of bizarre on TV, I do think people talked about it.
Yeah.
I think that that's what Miley was trying for. Problem is, I don't think she actually has the goods to do it. So it was a fail on that
level. I'm not
level.
Sure if she has perspective. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm not sure if she has attitude, and that means, you know, the definition of attitude is your angle of an approach towards something.
Right.
And I don't think she knows what her approach toward it is. I actually do
because
think...
I think she was told to do it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's coming organically from Miley Cyrus. And I don't blame her for saying yes to her people. She's a successful girl who wants to go to the next level. And she's part of this conglomerate. And you know, I'm sure she has managers and people. And I think that it's smart of her to say yes to those people. I just don't think the people who are surrounding her are also artists who are going to let her go to another level. That's because it was my problem was that it wasn't entertaining. It certainly was.
It wasn't entertaining. It was off key. I really would have preferred to have let Robin Thicke have the main part of the stage.
Yes. Then let's
because
go to
with
Robin
the horns and Pharrell and I mean they could have had like they could have really done
also because
something.
Then it
although
revealed.
He's a little bit in conflict with Justin and so Justin I mean not really I mean he
well, yes.
is no Justin Timberlake but I'm just saying it's like. They both do that boy soprano falsetto horns.
And he's a little bit older and he's married. And then that goes to part C for me with the issue with this. This got a lot of discussions, I think, on the interwebs is that where's Robin Thicke's culpability in this? Like, he okayed this. It was
I don't know, his label may be attached to this label, you know. Sometimes it's all about these freaking labels.
I found him in that Beetlejuice outfit. Getting rubbed up on by this girl in a song that's vaguely about date rape, right? I mean, I know you want it. You know, you're basically like a good girl going bad, and you say you don't want it, kind of, but you want it. It's like there's something vaguely date rapey about it, right? And so to have this young girl, to me, it revealed him. I've always liked him, but I've always felt he was a little bit sleazy. And just musically, I mean, I don't know him as a person, obviously. There's always been a sleazy quality to the way he performs and sings. And this to me was like, yep, you're kind of a sleazeball as a performer. That's what you're going for. And neither his performance, which I thought was a little pitchy, or her performance did it for me.
Yeah, I didn't think it did either, but I also felt like, I feel like she unleashed something that she probably didn't unleash in performances.
Maybe.
Because they didn't have a tongue. Because I don't feel
what
like.
What was with the tongue?
I don't know.
It was funny because like literally 2 days earlier, we had gone to the zoo, the San Diego Zoo, and got to up close. We got like a VIP. I'll talk about it next show. But we got a VIP backstage. Mm-hmm. Not backstage, but like we got taken on by zookeeper, by zookeepers. Mm-hmm. So we got to go in
the zoo.
It was great. And one of the things was we got to feed this beautiful giraffe named Nikki.
Oh, yeah. They have those tongues.
And that's all I can think of watching.
Well, I just felt like he wasn't trying to hump her. I mean, he was trying to... I don't know. I just felt like it was like, oh, my God, this girl's doing this around me.
Everything
and
about
kind
it was
of,
wrong artistically.
It was wrong.
I have no moral issues with it. She's a grown-up. And so it brings us to a couple of other issues around this that will be interesting to what people have to think. Is all the what they call, quote, slut-shaming, end quote, around it, right? Like... Everybody was like, you know, a lot of the blogs, and I'm not talking about like thoughtful older people. I mean, like the immediate response of like America, was like, what a slut. How she's such a slut. Look at her playing with her vagina with that big rubber foam thing and rubbing up against a married man and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, okay, why is she getting slut shamed? It's like we want little girls to, you know, look around. Little girls wearing short shorts and bra tops everywhere. And it's every video, every commercial, all the girls are dressed like that. And then this girl does it, and she's the one getting slut-shamed. Meanwhile, Robin Thicke walks around in skin-tight Beetlejuice pants and allows this girl to do that. Well, he says, I know you want it. And no one's saying, hey, buddy, What about being a good man and saying, this is not cool? Like, mm-hmm. why isn't he getting mm-hmm. creepo shamed? Mm-hmm. Right? If she's getting slut shamed, why isn't he creepo shamed? It's mm-hmm. a double standard. On top of that,
he just didn't seem a part of it, though.
I know, but
it literally felt like his performance, her performance slammed into his performance, and he was like left with this girl on stage.
It doesn't work that way. It was approved. He approved it.
I'm sure it was.
They had a rehearsal. He knew exactly what she was going to do. And then another part of it that I saw, that I read a bunch of really interesting articles about, was the idea that she, of her appropriation of black female sexuality, which is really what she was doing with this whole twerking thing, right?
And okay, define twerk.
Twerk is that sort of like booty shake thing where you sort of put your butt like right in someone's face and you make it
shake and make a move.
And it has come out of sort of the black culture and a black girl thing, a lot of black boys. And I read a really interesting article, a really powerful article. I don't know if it was in the Huffington Post or Jezebel, or about her appropriation of black female sexuality, and not just hers, but a lot of people's, but hers particularly in this twerking thing. So much so that even the women on stage with her who were black women were only there for their butts. There was a woman with an enormous behind who Miley like basically rimmed on stage. But she never interacted with the woman's face. Mm. She only interacted with the woman's butt. Mm-hmm. And so there's something about it's not, I'm not blaming Miley for this. It's the people involved. It's a cynical. Mm-hmm. I know, Miley. You know what's going to make you really hip is if we make you into like a quote black girl end quote kind of thing. And so we'll do this twerking thing, and you'll be overtly sexual, and we'll make you all about your butt in that way that it just seemed culturally appropriative and inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And literally, she never interacted with these girls. Humanness, mm-mm, only mm-mm. their asses, mm-mm. And that was really bizarre. Now, like I said, I don't blame Miley. She's being told what to do, I think, and saying yes because she's a kid. I'm like, oh, that sounds fun and wild, and I get to be crazy, and I'm a kid and I'm exploring my sexuality. I'm not mad at her. I'm really not. I think Miley's cool. And I think that she's getting a raw deal from this. They threw out this fairly marginally talented but sweet girl and said, here, do this thing that will get mm-hmm. lots of attention. She was like, okay.
She's gotten tons of attention. Interestingly enough, probably more attention than two things, I think, in the night that deserve so much attention. One being your favorite JT, Justin Timberlake.
They basically gave him a mini concert.
They did. It was like 20, 25 minutes or something where
from the minute he got on stage, people were standing and they did not stop.
Yeah.
Because that's JT.
Yeah. I mean, he was working it. I mean, he killed it all over with his mom and dad in the audience, and super, super cool. And I mean, for somebody to win the Michael Jackson Vanguard Award, being named for Michael Jackson, I mean, it's just a really huge tribute.
And also, it made it remind you of how many great songs he has.
It's so many.
And only, you know, he only has three solo albums.
Yeah.
You know,
so and then his career with NSYNC, which he made a point of saying, I've gotten the majority of my VMAs mm-hmm. with NSYNC and having the guys there.
Yep.
And all that. You know, it's really, really interesting because I was so taken, and I guess this is just the video culture, and maybe it always was, but we were just young. I mean, you know, when I think of like, I mean, how old was I? You know, I was in my teens when MTV first put the flag on the mm-hmm. on the moon, and, you know, and but I just was,
you were barely in your teens.
Barely, maybe not.
Because I was in my teens.
Okay, so I was not in my
barely.
Teens.
Barely. I was in high school.
Yeah. So I was in junior high, or almost in junior high. But I remember it because my brother was, you know, so much older.
Close to my age, right?
Yeah. And you know, and so it was a really big part because we had grown up watching American Bandstand and Soul Train, and so when MTV, this whole station that was gonna play videos all day long, it was like crazy, you know. But I was just so, you know, I mean, half the videos that they showed clips of, I've never seen.
Exactly. Or heard the song.
Right. Well, no, I'd heard some of the songs, but it was like, you know, nobody watches MTV.
Well, remember, right.
Nobody watches it. It's not for videos anymore.
Right.
You know,
it's not primarily VH1, for video.
It was for a while, you know, a decade and a half ago, then it was kind of like VH1 showed videos. Now, who shows videos? I don't even know.
Right. It doesn't have the same power culturally.
So that was really surprising of like, oh, I don't know these videos. You know, and then secondly, how young everybody was. Like, where are the older people? They're obviously not doing videos,
but they weren't. The only reason why they were back when it started was there was very little video content mm-hmm. because there was no such thing as videos. Mm-hmm. So the people that jumped on it had the money mm-hmm. or the wherewithal.
Or they were trying to be seen. You know, it's the only opportunity to be seen. Right. Now there's so many.
Either it was older people or established groups mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. Absolutely brand new. Remember, there was all that.
The only even rock bands had like videos. You know, I mean, right. there was no rock. It was like such a specific, slightly R&B pop. Certain age group, that was it. That was all that was represented. But that's, I guess, what MTV is.
No one else is watching. You know, there is no, oh God, what was that show called? It was like a heavy metal show, Bangers, Headbangers Ball.
Yeah.
It was like a regular MTV show, so it had like, they had metal videos.
Well, they had VJs, you know, and every VJ was kind of had a different flavor, you know? So it was like, you had quirky, and you'd have a Suzanne Vega video.
It was just released. Actually, just released.
Pop, and you'd have something
What's
else?
His name? John Waite. Remember the song that was a huge video?
I'm not missing you at all.
He finally admitted that it was about Nina Garcia. Not Nina Garcia, Nina, God, what was her name? Nina, she was one of the original VJs.
Yeah, the blonde hair.
Yeah.
Nina.
It was about her.
Yeah. Wow.
He just, like last week I saw that.
I love that song.
Okay, so let's talk about the history,
much.
Though.
It's on one of my jams.
Oh, it's a great song. Great cover by Tina Turner, by the way. She did a great cover in the 90s.
Brilliant. But one of, but the historical moment of the entire show was, of course, Macklemore and Lewis winning,
Social Progress. It would have been nice if he won Best Video, Best Song, but like, I mean, there's a couple of things that people said about it, you know, because I always go on the blogs to see.
And that's for Same Love, in case people don't know.
Right, they chose to do Same Love, which is awesome and really poignant. At the same time, and I'm so psyched they did, and I love him, and I think he's crazy talented.
Oh, you mean performing it that night?
Yes, crazy, sexy.
Yeah, but what a wonderful venue to have a ton of people see it. I'm so glad he did that as opposed to anything else.
But there is this narrative about how brave it was. I'm like, it's not that brave. It's a hit song, and it's going to make news. So it's brave.
I don't think they mean the performance is brave, but I think for any hip-hop artist to have put that song out, no one would have thought that song was brave.
I'm talking about there was some press about it being brave to do it on the VMAs. I'm like, that's not that brave. What's brave is his performance of his actual performance of it is
and
so
his acceptance speech.
His acceptance
he's
speech.
He's just lovely. I mean,
what a performer. I just didn't know because I've heard the song and I've heard his music and I think he's funny and great. And
I love him.
But I had never seen him until fairly recently. That wasn't the first time I'd seen him live. But
mm-hmm.
I'm just moved by what I just think an excellent performer he is.
Yeah.
And it made me think, as much as I love I can't remember the girl's name, Mary Lambert.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought she was a little pitchy live because then Jennifer Hudson came out and schooled her. Although it was beautiful the way they sort of went back and forth.
It was great.
But I think to myself, when is... Like, what if Megan had sang that part? What if Big Red had sang that? Ooh, was she gonna sing that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, you know, it's such a... But I kind of like that there's a quality about her voice her recording. I love beautiful. That it's kind of not... doesn't that it sounds kind of like a white woman singing it. Because I didn't know... The first time I heard Thrift Shop and the first time I heard Same Love, I thought it was a black guy singing. I thought it was maybe that's just stereotype racist for me.
Well,
but
most hip hop artists are African American.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's
the majority of hip hop.
It's unusual, you know. Right.
There's few that aren't a gimmick, like Eminem.
And what I love is that, you know, they released this song Thrift Shop, you know, that honestly the first time I ever heard Thrift Shop, some kids in my life, you know, who were under the age of like 11 and 8, you know, turned me on to Thrift Shop because it was the 8-year-old little girl's favorite song.
Oh, that's so funny.
And to like have an 8-year-old, because to me when she played it for me for the first time when I was over at her house for dinner with her family, and she was like she would always like to play music on the iPod, so she played that song for me, I don't know, like last spring or in the summer, mm-hmm. whenever it kind of came out, and I'd never heard it, and she was kind of like, I'm gonna get something, you know, was like, I got $20, you know, it's like 8-year-old little girl, and I felt kind of the same, I'm dating myself, but I kind of felt like when I got my 45 of pop music, you know, I felt like I was like,
ooh, you are dating
that
your own
is
girl,
totally,
I'm not even sure I would admit to
exactly, but it's like, pop music. Use it, talk about, you know, I was like, and it was all nonsensical, just fun to sing. And I, you know, but how interesting, like, you know, I thought, well, that same kid, 8 years old or 10 or 11 or 12,
listening to the whole album,
likes Thrift Shop, and then knows Macklemore has a new song and it's Same Love.
Yeah.
You know? And then I thought, wow, the conversations about us as gay and lesbian people that have to have happened this summer because of that song.
Here's an interesting question. I agree with you. And here's an interesting question just in the sort of scope of music. It is interesting that it came from a non-stereotypical rapper, meaning a non-African-American mm-hmm. rapper, right? You sort of, you know, like I draw a line between last summer, Frank Ocean, mm-hmm. to Same Love, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, did mm-hmm. Frank Ocean open the door for Same Love's success? And yet, it's interesting that an African-American wasn't the first mm-hmm. person in the hip-hop genre mm-hmm. to release a song like Same Love. I mean, mm-hmm. Frank Ocean's, I think, is more intensely personal because it's mm-hmm. first person. You know, it's talking, mm-hmm. he's talking about his actual feelings mm-hmm. and getting hurt. But Macklemore...
And less of a pop artist than same than
yes,
Macklemore
much of a pop artist. I mean, one of the things that I love that Macklemore said in an interview is that the line, when I was in third grade, I thought I was gay. And he said, that's the most vulnerable line he's ever written.
Mm.
Right? And there's something very telling mm-hmm. in that, mm-hmm. right? That's still... That the reason why it was vulnerable and brave for him to do it is mm-hmm. that there's still something that feels shameful to people mm-hmm. about talking about it mm-hmm. or admitting that or feeling certain feelings. So the bravery, I think, is in mm-hmm. that, is in his vulnerability, mm-hmm. is in his actual performance, in the words that he wrote. Not so much that he was so brave to do it on the VMAs, mm-hmm. because that's corporate. That, at that point, it's a hit song already.
Absolutely. I mean, it really just hit the zeitgeist.
Big
time.
You
know, because of marriage equality, because yes. of what happened in the Supreme Court, because of everything. And luckily, they had made this video, and it's
and
a long
song.
It,
unlike, all... so say for example, it is a corporate choice, right?
Yeah.
It was a corporate choice, like, do Same Love, because it'll be super hip and it'll be controversial.
I doubt that was ever a corporate choice, but it's interesting.
I'm not saying it is, but just as a yeah. juxtaposition to the Miley Cyrus thing,
yep.
right? So say this record label did say, because I don't think it was. I think that this was his choice.
Yeah, I think he probably said, I'll release this and I'll release this if you release this. Right. I bet is what he said.
And so, but even the choice to do it in the VMAs, I think.
Right.
So it's like, say for example, mm-hmm. for argument's sake, that his record label said, you know what you should do? You should do Same Love, because right now it's hip. Right now mm-hmm. it'll be controversial. The VMAs is a place to do something a little out there, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. The difference, so like, say that happened. I'm not saying it did, but say
yeah.
that happened. And then the same conversation with Miley, like, uh-huh. hey, do this. The difference is the level of execution is the difference that I was trying to make about Miley. Not that Miley's...
And there's just the maturity of an artist, though, too.
Well, that's...
Is Miley
an artist, or is she a puppet, and is Macklemore?
Either way,
his performance was so impassioned and honest
yeah.
and sincere and skillful
yeah.
and rehearsed.
Yeah.
She seemed unrehearsed.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's like, there's all sorts of things that made that performance historic.
Yeah.
And also, being a kid who remembers literally the day MTV started, I remember it. I stayed
yep.
up
yep.
to watch it
yep.
launch. I remember it was Video Killed the Radio
yep.
Star by the Buggles. I remember it very vividly, and
yep.
was an avid, freakishly avid MTV
mm-hmm.
watcher for many years as a
mm-hmm.
kid. And to see the inclusiveness of us
mm-hmm.
in that
mm-hmm.
On a show like the VMAs, despite
mm-hmm.
the fact that maybe MTV is slightly less relevant than it used to be,
mm-hmm.
Was really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
I do. I totally...
I also love that
Was it Nina Black?
Nina Black.
Oh,
Anita
God.
Blackwood. Nina Blackwood.
Nina
yes,
Black. We get
what,
it together.
That's what I miss. That's
the two
what
of us.
Missing You is about.
Yeah.
Or Miss You is about Nina Blackwood.
Oh,
and isn't that great? Such gossipy goodness. I feel like another thing, interesting thing about the song in general is that I love that instead of doing the obvious, which would have a dude singing,
mm-hmm.
right? Because even in the LGBT struggle,
mm-hmm.
the boys are always nudging the ladies out of the way
mm-hmm.
and taking center stage.
Sure, sure, sure.
And in this song,
mm-hmm.
it's some lady love that he's talking about.
Because mm-hmm.
I think the thing that freaks people out about same-sex marriage, I think it freaks people out less about women.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I've even heard people say that.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the rap is about, you know, he's talking about his uncles and he uses himself, and that's very male, male, male. Right. And what I think is so smart is then the refrain is a woman, you know, beautiful, singing about a woman, and it's
and she's a, my a love lesbian. And, she's an out lesbian.
Yeah, and she's a heavy set, you know, mm-hmm. big girl, big and beautiful.
She's a real lady. I think that's so smart.
Yeah.
Because it would have been easier to like have some, you know, I don't know, just stay with the boys, right? Because that's the more controversial, because people freak out about the boys in a way that they don't necessarily. Yeah. In a
it's
way that
inclusive,
I find,
you yeah. know. I mean, it's so inclusive about. I don't know. It's a really that song is a really, I think, a song that'll go down in the history books in the same one at like at 17, or you know what I mean. Like it's going to be in the way that some of the really important folk songs.
I was in the car on my road trip when I road trip to the East Coast, and I was in the car with Pat, and my iPod was on just on shuffle.
Uh-huh.
And I've had that song for quite some time, the same love song.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because it was released, like I ripped it off a. I ripped
six
it off
months
of
ago or something.
Yeah, but I ripped it off YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, because the video kind of came out first. I saw the video before I ever heard the song on the radio.
Exactly.
So that I was one opposite where I'm watching VMAs and I'm like, I've never seen any of these videos of songs I've heard a million times.
Except for this one.
I had seen the same Love video, and then somebody said, those are the guys who did Thrift Shop. And I was like, what?
What?
Like, I couldn't believe it.
So Pat, who I was driving with, straight boy, lots of gay friends, and his Loves Hip Hop, had never heard Same Love. And it literally randomly came on my shuffle as we were driving to Rhode Island, or to the Cape. And I wasn't even thinking about it. I just assumed that he knew it or that he had heard it. And, you know, he was driving and I was sort of like zoning out.
Yeah.
And then it was over and then he stopped, you know, he stopped the iPod and he was like, what did I just hear?
Love
and
that.
I said, you haven't heard it? And then we played it over again, you know, and he was like, that's amazing. I know, he's such a good guy. It's like, that's amazing. And I was like, I know, like, see, so many kinds of people are moved by it. I love that image that you talked about earlier about like the 8-10-year-old who's jamming to Thrift Shop and then convinces their parents to let them get the whole CD.
When you just said that,
CD.
It's like she's in the third grade. When I was in the third grade, you know, like when it's so cool. Makes me want to tear up that I like love that these
what
kids
were you saying
are...
that the end made you happy?
It just made me happy that what made me happy at the end? I'll tell you what made me happy in the end. We're going to go to the news, and I'll keep you hanging. Mitchell and I, we're going to be gabbing today on Hot Topics. We may not get much past the VMAs because we've got a lot to say. But stay with us. We got lots of GLBT news coming up now and what's going on in the theater scene.
Four powerful works. Four performances only. The Joffrey Ballet presents Russian Masters. George Balanchine's Allegro Brillante is a fast-paced dazzler with music by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Yuri Posikov's Riveting Bells and Adagio are set to music by Sergei Rachmaninoff and Aram Khachaturian's Spartacus. The Joffrey celebrates the 100th anniversary of Vaslav Nijinsky's revolutionary masterpiece, Rite of Spring, set to an electrifying score by Igor Stravinsky. The Joffrey Ballet presents Russian Masters at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, September 19th through the 22nd. Call 800-982-2787 or visit joffrey.org.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. In Pennsylvania, a court has to decide whether D. Bruce Haynes, Montgomery County's Register of Wills, has single-handedly added Pennsylvania to the growing list of states that formally sanctioned same-sex marriage, or if he has been acting illegally and must be stopped. Haynes began giving marriage licenses to gay couples in late July, shortly after the U.S. Supreme Court invalidated part of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. Pennsylvania is the only northeastern state that has neither same-sex marriage nor civil unions. However, the legality of more than 150 such licenses Haynes has issued remains an open question.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg recently became the first Supreme Court justice to officiate a same-sex wedding. Ginsburg officiated the August 31st wedding of Kennedy Center President Michael M. Kaiser and economist John Roberts at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. Ginsburg and Kaiser are close friends, as she is perhaps the Supreme Court's most fervent supporter of the fine arts.
G. Gene L. Dickerson, a transgender state inmate at Dallas, Pennsylvania, has filed a lawsuit in federal court citing unsafe living conditions relating to her transgender status. She alleges harassment and discrimination by State Department of Correction or DOC officials because she's transgender. Dickerson claims that all five cellmates she's had so far have either assaulted her, sexually harassed her, or threatened bodily harm.
Hawaii Governor Neil Abercrombie says it's likely there will be a special session of the state legislature in the fall to address same-sex marriage. Hawaii was the first state to consider marriage equality back in 1991. Voters eventually passed a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage in 1998.
A gay veteran of the Iraq War who fought against Don't Ask, Don't Tell has died in a car accident in Rochester, New York. Darren Manzella, who came out as gay in 2007 while serving in the Army during an interview on CBS's 60 Minutes, died August 29th. His 60 Minutes interview was filmed in secret in Kuwait City while he was still a staff sergeant in the Army. Manzella was 36 at the time of his death.
The board of the National LGBT Veterans Memorial has announced a public competition to design a monument to honor LGBT veterans who have served in the U.S. Armed Forces. The deadline for design submission is October 15th. If you'd like to apply or gather information, visit nlgbtvm.org.
Jerome has become the second city in Arizona, after Bisbee, to approve an ordinance recognizing gay and lesbian couples with civil unions. As of the 2010 census, Jerome's population was 444.
California's prison inmates will soon be able to marry same-sex partners as long as their significant other is not also incarcerated. The policy change follows the judicial dissolution of California's Prop 8.
The Obama administration has cleared the way for the spouses of gay and lesbian veterans to receive military benefits, with the Justice Department declaring it will no longer enforce a provision of the law that states only opposite-sex married couples are eligible. The Justice Department has determined the Supreme Court's rationale in a decision overturning part of the Defense of Marriage Act should also apply to Title 38, the part of the U.S. Code that governs veterans' benefits.
San Antonio, Texas, the nation's seventh largest city, has added sexual orientation and gender identity protections into ordinances governing city employment, contracting, housing, and public accommodations. The city council passed the updates 8-3.
In world news, in Jamaica, 41-year-old openly gay man Dean Moriah was fatally stabbed. Additionally, his house was set on fire with his body inside, and his car was stolen. In the same parish slash location in Jamaica, on July 22nd, 16-year-old transgender individual Dwayne Jones was mobbed, stabbed, beaten, and shot after he attended a local party.
In Denmark, approximately 10,000 people got an early start on Copenhagen Pride festivities by marching against Russia's recently passed anti-gay law. Protesters taking part in the To Russia with Love demonstration gathered in front of Christiansborg, the House of Parliament, and then marched to the Russian embassy where they submitted signatures of people opposing the law.
South Africa's Minister of Justice confirmed that the government intends to introduce the concept of hate crimes law for the first time after more than 170,000 people from 175 nations joined one of the largest international campaigns ever hosted on Change.org. The campaign was launched following escalated violence against LGBT people in the country, particularly the so-called corrective rape and murder of lesbians and transgender men.
Kate Walsh and Helen Richardson, a couple whose British hockey team won a bronze at the London 2012 Olympics, will get a civil partnership on September 14th. The couple is getting a civil partnership before same-sex couples will be able to officially marry. While they were made legal earlier this year, the first same-sex weddings are expected by the summer of 2014.
In entertainment news, Russell Tovey, who appeared in the Broadway, London, and film incarnations of the History Boys, will join Tony nominee Jonathan Groff in the upcoming HBO series, Looking. The half-hour series focuses on three young gay men living in San Francisco. Scott Bakula will play a prominent, wealthy figure in the city's gay community.
The Chicago International Film Festival is rebranding its LGBT focus section entitled Outrageous to now be called Outlook. The 49th Chicago International Film Festival will take place October 10th through the 24th.
NSYNC member and radio show host Lance Bass is engaged to artist Michael Turchin. The happy moment happened in New Orleans, where the couple spent Labor Day.
Sir Elton John has won the first ever Brits Icon Award. The musician was printed with the prize by his friend, singer Rod Stewart. The Icon Award is given to artists who have had a lasting impact on UK culture.
Out endurance swimmer Diana Nyad finally set a record she had chased for more than three decades, completing the 110-mile swim from Cuba to Key West, Florida on September 2nd. She completed the trip in 52 hours, 54 minutes, and 18.6 seconds. With no shark cage. She initially attempted the swim in 1978. The last previous attempt, which would have been number four, was last year. She made it 41 miles before succumbing to storms and jellyfish stings.
Harry Connick Jr. will be the third and final judge for the upcoming season of American Idol, joining Jennifer Lopez and Keith Urban. Original Idol judge Randy Jackson will replace Jimmy Iovine as in-house mentor. Idol now has a judging panel entirely made of singers for the very first time.
The hit Broadway musical Wicked surpassed Miss Saigon to become the 11th longest-running show in Broadway history. There are currently nine productions of Wicked worldwide.
HBO's hit True Blood will end its run in 2014. Consisting of 10 episodes, the seventh season will launch next summer.
Co-writers J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman have quit working on DC Comics' Batwoman because the company won't let the titular superheroine marry her fiancé. Batwoman, whose real name is Kate Kane, is an out-and-proud lesbian who's dating a cop, Maggie Sawyer. The writers posted on their blog, "Unfortunately, in recent months, DC has asked us to alter or completely discard many long-standing storylines in ways that we feel compromise the character and the series. It's unclear who will take the reins of this comic book, which has won two GLAAD awards, or how this development will impact Batwoman's plot trajectory."
Jodie Foster will direct an episode of the Netflix political thriller series House of Cards, second season. House of Cards stars Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright as an ambitious couple in D.C. and has been nominated for nine Emmy Awards.
Openly gay True Blood showrunner Alan Ball, who is also behind 6 Feet Under, has written and will direct I Am Chippendales, the story of Steve Banerjee, an immigrant who went from pumping gas to running a high-end nightclub that evolved into Chippendales.
Recovering from breast cancer, singer Lorna Luft will perform for the first time in 20 years with her half-sister Liza Minnelli for two pink party shows October 14th and 21st at Birdland in New York City. Others scheduled to perform include Ann Hampton Calloway, Liz Calloway, Jim Caruso, and Brian Stokes Mitchell.
The David Plant AIDS movie, How to Survive a Plague, will be part of PBS's new season of Independent Lens. The film tells the story of AIDS activist organization ACT UP and TAG, Treatment Action Group.
Will and Grace, which won 16 Emmys, will debut on WeTV September 22nd, just in time for the series' 15th anniversary. The first day will feature an all-day marathon. Will and Grace will air weekdays, 5 to 8, and all night on Tuesdays, beginning at 8 o'clock.
Honorary Oscars will go to Angelina Jolie, Steve Martin, Angela Lansbury, and Italian costume designer Piero Tosi. Jolie will receive the Jean Herschel Humanitarian Award, while Martin, Lansbury, and Tosi will get Oscars recognizing their career achievements. And that's the Week in News brought to you by Windy City Times.
This is Sharon Gless, and you're on the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Dance.
Art. Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 9th, 2013, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Nominated for 13 Tony Awards, In the Heights is making its Chicago debut at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. Don't miss the show critics are calling a must-see this fall. In the Heights, directed by Rachel Rockwell, is now playing through October 6th. For tickets to In the Heights, visit ParamountAurora.com. That's ParamountAurora.com.
Porchlight Music Theater presents the Chicago premiere of Double Trouble, a musical tour de farce starring brothers Alexander and Adrian Aguilar. When two singing, dancing, songwriting brothers get their big break in 1940s Hollywood, it's lights, camera, mayhem. Eddie Weiss of the Chicago Sun-Times raves, Double Trouble is highly recommended. Masterful, pure old-fashioned, utterly mindless fun. Chris Jones of the Chicago Tribune calls the Aguilar brothers Broadway quality talent, solid comedians, and lively dancers. They're a pleasure to watch. Playing now through October 6th. For tickets and information, visit porchlightmusictheater.org. Double Trouble, it's a musical tour de farce. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at windycityqueercast.com.
Tell her every day. Yeah, I know, when I compliment her, she won't believe me. And it's so sad to think that she don't see what I see. But every time she asks me, do I look okay? I say, when I see you.
So we're back, Mitchell on the couch, back here in our little home. I missed you.
I know, I missed you too.
It's so nice. And in our next show, we're going to be talking a ton about San Diego and you kind of giving us the GLBT beat on the city. I haven't been there in almost 2 decades. That sounds terrifying to say. It actually has been 2 decades. But anyhow, and I was an adult.
It's a very gay city.
It's a very gay city. So we'll be talking all about that. But you had asked me what at the end was,
the VMAs, yeah,
was so great. And, you know, while, right when you left, I got the opportunity to go to see Bruno Mars here in Chicago.
Mars,
and, you know, Bruno Mars kind of ended the show with Gorilla, which is a really interesting song. You know, it's a really interesting song, and it was an interesting song to end the VMAs that night. It is the song that he ends his concert with. And, and you know, I have to say that I've never seen Justin Timberlake live. So I will preface this by saying this in front of you.
Uh-huh.
But I have seen Prince live, and I've never seen anybody command an audience the way Prince did. But I felt like Bruno Mars was pretty damn
close.
Oh, he's
a showman.
He is such a showman. He is so incredible. And he took us on such a story in that concert of, like, you know, young man going from Marry Me and you can count on me like one, two, three. Like this sweet little hopeless romantic, kind of growing into a little more of a man,
right,
you know, locked out of heaven and If I Were Your Man and these kind of right, heavier songs. And he did some blues gospel stuff in the middle. And his banter was light, but it was very funny. It was very about controlling the audience and how, you know, if you ever want to be a rock star, let me just show you all you have to do to, like, get a woman to, like, scream. And, you know, and he did this whole thing of, like, you just, you know, he'd stop the music and then he'd just go, you know? And I mean, I got the whole United Center. Like, it was just really...
I have to say, it works on gay boys, too.
Totally. You know, worked on lesbians. I mean, I was sitting there dying. And he had his band down front, you know, all playing, which you could kind of see from this VMAs. And then his final number is just kind of this thing of, like, taking back his full... from the primates to, like, his, you know, he's risen above to kind of the evolution of a man. You know, and it's this big, powerful song. And, I
yeah,
mean, all the
as a
lasers
child,
and...
Elvis.
Yeah.
Is that so
from
cute?
Like one of those movies, like Honeymoon in Vegas.
Yeah.
But he is just, and somebody said, God, I couldn't believe how short he is. He's tiny, but he just is so large on stage. So I was happy because, you know, I don't know if it registered for everybody else at the end of that show. Because it was such a weird disenfranchise. Like, some one thing from the show didn't comment on the next thing. But he is just such a good performer. He is amazing.
He won me over when I saw him do
Valerie and
yes.
his tribute for Amy Winehouse. We've discussed that.
Yeah.
Was brilliant.
I mean, that was when
I knew I wanted to see him in concert.
Me too. That was when I was like, not only does he write a good catchy hook and is super engaging as a performer, but like, he's the real deal.
He was not pitchy one note. He is the real voice.
Yeah.
He is the real dance. He was more Michael Jackson than I've ever. I will say that watching him on stage is as close as I've ever felt to somebody actually stepping into Michael Jackson's shoes.
Wow, that's powerful.
And I'm not saying that Justin can't move. Of course Justin can move. And
I don't think Justin ever wanted to move into Michael Jackson's shoes.
No, and I don't think Bruno Mars does either. He's far more of a rocker and reggae and soul.
Right, he plays guitar.
He plays everything. He plays drums. He plays guitar. He plays electric and acoustic guitar. He sang H to T, as Tyra would say, from his toenails the entire show. And just, you know, and he has a lot of hits too with two albums.
I know, doesn't he?
You know, with two, and, you know, and he's definitely written some songs for people that he didn't record.
Right.
So, and he didn't even do those. So, I mean, anyhow, it's a nice way for me because it's a little nostalgic, you know, 3 weeks after he comes through Chicago to see him live.
I think he's great. His performance was amazing.
He's unbelievable. He's really unbelievable. And I felt like a little eclipsed by Justin's 25 minutes and Miley's confusing thing we were all going to talk
Marley's
about
tongue.
And same in the same love kind of political thing. So there was really not a note for him if he was going to end the show. He
right.
couldn't have done any different song to end the show.
Right.
Because he's done Locked Out of Heaven on some shows.
Probably in any other year his performance would have been a highlight, but it was sort of eclipsed.
It's exactly right. And I think like if he had been right in the middle of the show, which was all Justin, and he had just done If I Were Your Man, like his performance of that was just amazing. I mean, amazing. I mean, he's extraordinary. He plays everything, and his band is so old school. And I've never seen a performance like that with a band and everything.
Where was he when you
United Center?
Oh wow,
brilliant! And filled the place. I mean, just not. I don't mean with people. I just mean his presence and his performance really was erupting out of the United Center, which is a lot for a little 5 foot. Three young
he's my size.
Performer
well, you
who
know,
also
I believe
doesn't have like you know like not decades
right.
of music like
right.
Prince you know
but he has decades of performance at this point.
But he's so talented
and
so sexy.
If I'm not mistaken, he's Filipino.
But he's from Hawaii.
Yeah, but I think his family is Filipino, and I'm having as many Filipino friends as I do because I'm working on ships and stuff. These are not tall people. So he's pretty average.
Yeah. And you know, I don't mean to say anything like you can't be whatever.
But it's like Judy Garland being 4'11".
Exactly. I'm just saying, like, and Cher's only 5'6", but somehow people their magnetism is just so large that it's not even about his height. I'm not meaning that. I just mean like he's a young kid, you know, he's not some enormous imposing presence, but his performance, his star power is just megawatt. It's incredible. So speaking of megawatt, and you mentioned Big Red, the announcement was made last week that 50 Shades, the musical that our friend Megan is one of the stars of with Second City, is coming to the Broadway in Chicago, Broadway Playhouse. Right after I finished doing the Julia Child play, they're moving in right after us. And I'll be talking more about the Julia Child show in upcoming weeks, but that it is being released. It's just going to be a short run, October 22nd to the 27th, at the Broadway Playhouse, and there are tickets on sale now. So I encourage you to get it.
It was
hitting New York and hitting Edinburgh, Fringe Festival. You know, Megan's got all her chops working
in fact,
there's
a great, and maybe we can post the
link of
the
her
link
singing.
Of it.
The
there's
video?
There's a video.
Mm-hmm. They sent it out with the press release. And
oh my God.
It out.
I mean, she is.
She's killing it.
Singing.
She's singing. But it's interesting, too, that this hits, and I don't know if they knew this, the same week that
the movie casting
was announced, and on, you know, the Today Show, more was kind of discussed about you know, whether we were going to go to war with Syria or anything else going on then, you know, the casting of 50 Shades. So do you have thoughts, feelings in, you know?
About Charlie, Hunan?
I don't know.
Being cast as, I don't know.
He's from Sons of Anarchy. He's a beefy looking guy.
He's from Queer as, the original Queer as Folk.
Oh, interesting.
The British version.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he was the kid.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's been around for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Don Johnson and Millie Griffin's daughter.
Oh, really?
Is the girl.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's the right type because I've never read the book. I've only ever seen the musical spoof.
Either.
And
yeah.
Trust me, the guy who plays
Christian
Grey is definitely not the type. It's
yeah.
deliberate. You'll see when
yeah.
you see the show because
yeah.
it's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm going.
But any excuse to see that particular actor
mm-hmm.
in any sort of sexual situation is worth the price of the ticket.
He's there you go.
A stone cold hunk.
Yeah.
Period. Point. Blank story. I mean,
yeah.
he's just a stone cold hunk.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
And he's a good actor. So,
yeah.
It seems to me the storyline is a little bit beneath his talent.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I've gathered from it.
It's kind of interesting that, like, you know, it's such a huge hit. I mean,
I
she
it's
was,
a phenom.
Like, on the Forbes, like, top
yeah.
four. You know, she was like number four or something on the most, you know, people who've earned the most
I
money.
I wish somebody would write
Spielberg
maybe somebody
and somebody
has.
Else. But, you know, it's interesting that, like, I feel like they kind of had to cast people who had some pedigree. Hopefully they would cast right. people who have pedigree, but aren't, like, a red carpet name quite yet,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because either what it's going to do is it's going to lock them into these things or it's going to catapult them. You
right.
know, either they'll never be able to play anything else ever again.
Right.
Or they have the opportunity, if the script is anything, to have kind of a... I don't
know. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where the book, the phenom is going to die before this movie gets released, and it's going to go unnoticed.
I don't know, Mitchell. It's in like gazillions of countries.
It
you
is.
Know, there's three books.
I'm just not sure that people want to see it on the big screen. I also think...
You think people don't want to see this when they're reading it, like, on planes
know.
And in...
I don't know who's going to go to it.
Women,
I really don't.
Women.
I also
women.
Think... I
it's women who haven't had a Sex in the City. Women who haven't had that thing yet.
But do you know what this is about? Do you know?
I do know what it's about, but I just...
I mean, I get no... Once again, it's not a moral
it's
thing.
It's hilarious to me. This
I am curious, and I haven't read anything about this, and it would be curious for me to... If there is something written about it, somebody please send us a link on the website discussing, like, what is the zeitgeist in women's lives in 2013 that this kind of like S&M subjugation literally giving away all of your power
mm-hmm.
to somehow feel empowered is such a phenom. Doesn't that say something about what's going on?
I don't know. We will continue this conversation.
Okay.
But
if somebody has an opinion, let us know.
I think erotica is as old as time.
This is specific erotica.
I
agree with you.
I understand, but I mean S&M, bondage, you know, this kind
Why
of erotica
this,
is as old
not this
as
kind.
Time.
Erotica is, not this kind. This is specific,
I
and
don't
it is
know.
Extreme.
Anais Nin is the
it's
same.
It's also badly written.
Anne
from,
Rice's
I've read
erotica of the whole Sleeping Beauty series is the same. Exit to Eden that they... You know, that she, Anne Rice, wrote that was made into a horrible movie with Rosie O'Donnell and mm-hmm. Dan Aykroyd. I mean, it's all of this, you know.
Neither of those were the phenomenon that this is, though.
No. But they've always existed. And so
I know,
just
but why
think
right now?
Vampires
must,
have always existed.
I'm
but why
they
are they the phenomenon
my
that
point
they
is that
were?
They're not, it's not that they've always existed. It's like, why is it a phenomenon right now?
Yeah.
Because this isn't like a particularly well-written book.
Yeah.
But what's going on culturally that right now this exploded?
Yeah.
And Exit to Eden, for example, while successful, didn't explode in a way that's a global phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? Something's happening.
I don't know.
Something's happening. You mark my words. Something's happening. Mm-hmm. There's some shift in feminism. There's some shift in women's roles. There's some shift that we're going to be able to look back on 30
mm-hmm.
years from now.
Mm-hmm.
It'd just be interesting to see if anyone has a theory about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer. I'm not a woman, but something's
mm-hmm.
happening.
Mm-hmm. There's an equaling of the sexes that is trying to happen, but that's been trying to happen since
exactly.
the 60s.
Right. Is this, is this some psychic payback for women wanting to have it all and being so empowered and us being so close to having our first female president?
Mm-hmm.
And so this weird collectively unconscious guilt about it. And so they somehow need to be put back in their place in order to deserve this place
yeah.
of power.
I don't know. This damsel in distress thing is just as old as time.
Ick.
It just is.
I'm not saying that the fantasy isn't.
Everybody wants to be taken, you know, captured. I just think there is this. I don't know what it is.
I think that you're talking a much. You're talking about much less graphic things. You're talking about erotica, and this is porn.
No, I know it's porn, but I don't know. You know, you say erotica, I say porn, it's yada,
different,
yada, yada.
There's a different tone.
No, I know. I mean, you know, look, I am talking exactly what it is, but I just think that, well, we'll see. We'll pose this question.
I know, right?
We will pose this
I'm
question.
I'm actually curious to see what people think.
Yeah, I don't.
I've actually never read. I've read a couple of chapters.
Yeah,
right? I have a friend who had the book, and so I sort of plopped
it's ridiculous.
Down. My only issue with it is that it's so badly
written. It's just badly written. But anyhow, I mean, you know, it has brought joy to many women.
Yes, it
and,
has.
You know, I think
and
if fantasy gets to be whatever fantasy gets to
absolutely.
Be for people.
Oh, yeah, so. I'm not judging the fantasy. I'm just question. I just am curious about what it says about us culturally.
Deep thoughts deep from thoughts, Mitchell Fain. Well, I do want to leave us with one thing, and we won't discuss it really much, but just that it is the anniversary of September 11th this week, whenever you're listening to this podcast, and always just a strange reminder of how long it's been now since that morning and a time in our generation when things, you know, changed and changed for our country and changed for us
individuals. It's interesting. I thought about it today. It's funny that you bring that up right now because I thought about it today. I was I had a really great day just being outside because it was so gorgeous and on my bike and at the lake, and I thought to myself and I didn't see any planes. I was on the beach for a while. I didn't see any planes fly over, and the sky was so blue, and I thought, wow, this reminds me of that day. Do you know how gorgeous it was here? That
I
day
do.
I was living in my high-rise at the time, so my it was Florida ceiling windows
I was living not 6 blocks from here.
And I was on the 14th floor looking at the lake. So, like, it was the most beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very jarring to not have any planes going over. Because when you live that close to the lake,
silence.
You see planes. Yeah. And so I thought, just today, randomly, I thought, wow, this feels like that day.
Yeah. It's an echo, right? It's an echo and a reverberation that we all still feel. So we are honoring and remembering September 11th for however that impacted all of us and others around us. And in our next show, Mitchell Fain will be taking us to San Diego.
Okay, San
and
Diego.
And we'll see how he put the GLBT in San Diego. So.
While trying to stick to a new nutrition program.
Oh, dear God.
That's a whole other story.
It's so many things.
So many things.
So many things here on the Queer Cast. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queer Cast. Special thanks to our Queer Cast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueerCast.com and iTunes. The next QueerCast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City QueerCast. Queer and now. Amazing.